Brent, thanks for doing this with me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So tell me what you do and what kind of space are you in?
Sure. So I'm a recruiter by trade, but I know we're really here to talk about e-commerce. That's a big field, but to kind of narrow it down, my wife and I, we're network marketing professionals in the e-commerce space, helping companies do revenue online instead of through traditional retail sales. So, okay. Yeah.
So companies, not individuals. Or are you considering individuals as companies now? When they get into the e-commerce space?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a little bit of both, you know? I mean, I think we definitely help individuals and families, right? Transition a lot of that in their own household, right? But I think we're definitely kind of people-centered in what we do. So we're not approaching companies and trying to attract their business, right? We have partners that have, you know, those things set up already.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's about the revenue, you know?
Yeah.
Down to it, so, yeah.
Well, so I was telling you before we got started with this that e-commerce has been a space that has been introduced to me particularly 10 years ago, right?
Okay.
And you see a lot of ads just hitting you and saying, hey, this is a space to be in. You know, Amazon FBA mm-hmm. being in particular the hottest thing to be talked about around that time. But I wonder if that's still the case and what's the current state of e-commerce and how is it different from what it was through the boom of the Amazon FBA era?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things have changed, you know, and first off, I just want to say I know people, like I was telling you before, I know people that their business does what they do my monthly revenue in a day or in a few hours. And so certainly not, I know there's people who have bigger scale than me, you know, but I think I can add some value with some of this stuff. And to your question about how has it changed? I think there was the excitement, when you're talking about Amazon FBA, fulfillment by Amazon, you know, a lot of people wanted to drop ship. That was kind of the other buzzword. Mm. And I think a lot of people, it was exciting to them because you have this thing called e-commerce. I think before that you had like what I would call kind of the eBay phase, where it was just a platform for the transaction, but everything else was on you. Mm. And then you go into this drop shipping Amazon or FBA phase where people wanted to kind of offload the logistics of it, you know, as many of the logistics as they could. And that was, you know, so these big platforms, Amazon and a bunch of others really started, you know, the industry grew to where there were subcategories now, you know. And I think now we're in a phase where I think you have a lot of people who do well with retaining some of those aspects of the business and kind of having that under their wing. But I think a lot of people are moving to where they want, there's so many platforms that handle a lot of it or most of it for you. Amazon's one of them. There's many others, you know, but there's a lot of platforms that handle most, if not all of it for you. And I think we're now moving to where a lot of people want to be the influencer, you know what I mean? And I mean, if you think about it, influencers, you know, the affiliate links and all these other things, affiliate marketing, all these things, that's a form of e-commerce, right? Where somebody else is handling the transactions and the product itself is not even yours, but you're the one capturing the attention, right? And making that transaction happen, you know?
Well, that's a very interesting piece because I did see influencers that have followers pursue that space of having their links at the bottom of the description or the bottom of their posts, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't really see that as being a productive business model from their end. And, you know, therefore now they're entering into a completely unique space. And one of the things that you need to really have in this arena, from my experience, from my understanding, is that you need to capture attention, right? Mm-hmm. People need to be okay to purchase your product, but your product need to be something that they need, mm-hmm. at least to some extent. Mm-hmm. How do you see that dynamic with this new introduction of influencers infiltrating the space, but also with product management and all that?
I think that it presents some interesting dynamics, I guess that's a good way to put it, as the word you use, you know. For example, there's a lot of people who are getting really good at video and producing their own content, you know, which I think is wise. That of tomorrow will be all AI, which is crazy. Mm. I'm sure we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But I think like one of the guys I follow, he's in e-commerce, but a completely different industry than me. He was super excited about like certain gun holsters and pistols and firearms and things like that, accessories. And he couldn't find the ones he wanted, so we made them. And he had a somewhat decent YouTube following about his truck, right? Completely different industry.
Right.
You know, firearms, trucks, I guess there's some crossover. But so then he, one day he was like, hey guys, I'm excited about this thing that I made. Check it out. He wasn't trying to sell it. now that just that holster business does like $500,000 in revenue for
him. That's impressive.
Yeah. And so my point in saying that is like, he, I'm not sure he was really trying to be an influencer as we know it today, but he created a following of people that if you think, if they're following this person, they have some things in common probably that attract them to this person. And so that if they have things in common, you could market to those things. You know? So that's one interesting dynamic that it brings up is as you build a following, they probably have a set of, you know, commonalities and beliefs and values that make them marketable in one way or another, you know? So.
Yeah, I guess that's the whole influencer culture at this state, just you encapsulated it, right? Being able to raise some sort of attention on a consistent basis and therefore selling a product. But I do see the phase or the next iteration of that being maybe just like how that guy did, an actual particular product that you manufacture yourself. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you have 100% of the sales. You're not really dividing the revenue, for example, with an e-commerce company that is trying to sell a particular product, and you're just getting a check, and you're trying to really push that on your followers. Mm-hmm. It might be a better approach. However, just going back to the e-commerce topic, so define it for me so that I can really understand it. If I'm really going into the space, like, what is e-commerce?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it sounds broad because it really is. Anytime you're helping transactions take place or facilitating a transaction of a product or service online, then I think that qualifies as e-commerce, you know, and that's notoriously broad, you know, and there's so many ways you can do that. I mean, I guess I'll to further answer your question, though, I'll speak about it from my perspective as a network marketing professional where, you know, essentially what we're looking to accomplish is, actually, here, I'll do this. Like, I'll do an exercise with you, okay? Mm-hmm. I got my calculator out. How many people do you think are in your cell phone right now?
Contacts.
Rough guess.
I don't know. 500?
500. Okay.
That's a lot. Maybe let's cut down to 300.
Okay, sure. 300, it's fine. Okay, so I checked this out. I found these stats from the Bureau of Labor Stats. These are stats for 2022. I kind of label this consumables, monthly expenses for people. That's food, personal care, and miscellaneous. Okay. That total per household was $934. Okay. So that's, again, Bureau of Labor Stats for 2022. So you said 300 people roughly in your contacts. And if they're averaging, what did I say, 934?
Yeah.
$934 for easy math, if I can type here. Wow. That's $280,000. Of revenue that's moving through your contact list essentially every single month. So my question is, how much of that do you want to come through your household? And think about all the myriad ways that you can maybe capture some of that revenue. A lot of it's going to be through online, right? So that I would say that's e-commerce. As far as what my wife and I do, that's really what we spend our time doing is, you know, how can I capture the revenue of the people that are in my network? Right. And then I can, you know, our mentor showed us how, and a lot of times we still lean on them for this. We show other people how to do the same thing. That's how we scale. Right. So instead of having employees who accomplish a certain task for us, we partner with other people in business, very similar to, but not the same thing as a franchise. Right. And that's how we scale and grow. So we're capturing revenue in our network and we're helping other people do the same thing to scale and grow. That's our e-commerce. Yeah. So
I understand now.
Okay.
So it is very different from selling a trendy product that can just disappear in a matter of months and weeks. This is more of a reoccurring household necessities.
Exactly.
That are being purchased and going out of people's pockets anyways as it is.
Exactly.
You're just trying to find a better way to propose it and sell it to your contacts, like you said. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money right there.
Yeah.
When you really quantify it and put it and dollar figures, it was pretty.
It can be staggering, you know. I mean, and you think about that. That's just your personal contact. How many businesses do you know? You know, and one of our customers was his business is significantly reduced now. But we used to live in an apartment complex. They owned about 30 buildings, probably more, here in Kansas City, and got to know the guy in the cleaning crew. Come to find out, he wasn't on the cleaning crew. He owned the cleaning company. So he began buying different things from us, his glass cleaner, right, his service cleaner, his bathroom wipes, things like that, to where he had an expansive list of products that he bought for his business. And that was really, you know, thing. So you talk about your personal context. What about business context?
Business context.
Yeah.
And so, really social media.
Exactly.
Connections, right? I mean,
exactly.
You can really broaden it and really reach a lot of people. So how do you, what is your value proposition? How is one person buying from you in comparison to buying it from Amazon?
Sure. Yeah. Good question. I mean, I think initially what we're talking about is, hey, you know, honestly, aunt, uncle, coach, teacher, friend, coworker, anything those lines, you know, I started this business because I'm trying to accomplish X, Y, and Z in my life. Really think this is a way for me to do it. When I thought of people who might support me, I thought about you, you know. First of all, it's kind of a little cheap tug at the heart, you know what I mean? But I think you have initially when you're trying to accomplish something, you have to be the separator, and you have your the service and the value that you bring to that person as a relationship. I think that's where it starts in a lot of cases. But then as you're continuing to develop, you develop success stories, you develop testimonies, you develop this is if you have quality products. If you if you're choosing some fly by night product, I can't help you, you know, and I don't think anybody really can. But if you have some quality products, then you, exactly like you mentioned earlier, you start to develop a testimonial success story. Man, I would have never used that product, but my aunt or my uncle or my neighbor, their life was actually dramatically improved by this product, this supplement, this skincare, this cleaning product, right? Something as simple as that. You then carry that with you to your next you know, your next conversation.
Yeah.
And in that way, I think that's your value proposition. You know, they say facts sell, but stories, no, facts tell, but stories sell.
So,
you know,
that's very true. If you can have a personal connection with someone really that has benefited from it, that's how word of mouth businesses grow, right? And I've seen a lot of businesses that have really scaled just simply from word of mouth. So how is consumer behavior, how do you think that affects your business as a whole? When I say consumer behavior, it's, you know, depending on the economy, right? I mean, are we going through a recession? That's a question being thrown around right now. Some people are certain that we are going through a recession. Inflation is something that I can attest to personally, right?
Yeah, major.
Yeah, people are going to be conservative when we are faced with these kind of incidents that are out of our control.
Yep.
And they will be apprehensive to purchase that product. How do you combat that, if at all? I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. It's super relevant, you know. I think, first of all, again, if your value proposition is yourself, and at least, again, initially, right? And again, this is just from our perspective. There may be instances where this is not relevant. Yeah. But from our perspective, I think you're adding value with yourself, with your service, right? With you, who you are as a person to that person. And I think, again, same thing with the product of your, excuse me, the value of your products itself, the quality really is the word I'm looking for of your products. And then I think also being diversified, that's a big thing in the space, diversifying your customer base, not only in number of paying clients, customers, but also in what they're purchasing. Right. So, for example, I have one of my very first customers. Her name is Ann. She's not my grandma, but I call her grandma. She's my next door neighbor growing up. It's his grandma. She's like the stereotypical grandma that you think of. Right. Very motherly. She used to buy like cosmetics and makeups and stuff from me. And then she also occasionally will purchase like some joint supplements and things like that. Less and less she buys the cosmetics, but she does not forget those joint supplements because the value that they bring, and they actually help her quite a bit. And I can attest to that across, you know, our whole network of business owners, is that a lot of times it's the things that provide the most value for people. They may skimp or change a little bit, but they'll stick with the things that they have come to need, and the needs that you're actually filling in their life. On the flip side of things, though, now as we scale and grow on the partnership side, a lot of people are having that conversation, like you said, where I can't believe, you know, I got 3 bags of groceries and it was $100. Man, this used to be, what am I, you know, the end of the month, they start feeling that. People are really looking for ways to create additional income right now, and not just an extra $50 or $100. People are really looking for ways to create other dependable, reliable, scalable streams of income into their household. And in that instance, I'm not going to say I love inflation. I don't like it when people are hurting when, you know, things cost more for people. But, you know, I'm not I can kind of roll with the punches on that because I know that my as we scale, right, we have a network marketing model. As we scale and grow with other business partners, a lot of them are kind of driven to us by the challenges there, you know. So on the customer side of things, adding the value, I think, and having those products that they've come to need in their life, you know, and then your service as well. But on the as we scale and grow, a lot of people have said, man, I have to do something extra right now. I can't do another year with just my salary because it's just not enough. And so in that sense, we're kind of positioned well, I think, for both. So
let's talk about technology and what it has, how it is affecting the space of e-commerce, right? We touched on AI, maybe we can start from there, but I do want to talk about how technology is helping or if not taken away from the industry right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think across multiple industries, AI is certainly top of mind for a lot of people. And same with us, you know, I mean, I've used it a little bit for some, I would say, some pretty basic productivity tasks there. You know, I may not be exactly on the cutting edge of or early adopter phase, if you will, of that stuff. I think there is, first of all, it's a great time in history, e-commerce or otherwise, to start something because there is so much technology. There's all these platforms, you know, kind of the side hustle generation, if you will. I'm not sure that's a phrase, but there's a lot of, technical infrastructure, I'll say, that's out there for people who want to start something, you know, almost to the point where, you know, you don't know where to start.
Right.
But that being said, I mean, I think exactly like you said, we talked about coming from an eBay generation to dropshipping and Amazon FBA, and now to where you look at things like TikTok Shop, and I think that's kind of one of the up and coming contenders for Amazon, and people tell a team of people talk about Shopify. I'm not affiliated with any of these things, but you know, or Etsy, you know, I think it's enabled a lot of people. I think it's a great thing. It's really enabled a lot of people to get started with something. I mean, take this podcast, for example, you know what I mean? It's like a few pieces of equipment, you know what I mean? And you got the platforms to really get a message out there that today is hopefully adding some value. Yeah, but I think, you know, where it's going technology-wise, I think a lot of people are going to be using it to create a brand. I watched just yesterday, guy online, he put together a 60 second clip of different AI videos, and I could not tell, you know. I mean, I knew that it was AI because of his post, but I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is mind blowing, the accuracy of this. So now moving forward, even further barrier to entry about marketing or branding, you know, putting your brand out there, creating a catalog of content that is amplified by artificial intelligence. I think you can put some really quality content out there. So I think it's just going to be amplified, especially when it comes to the advertising, marketing, and getting your brand out there space. So.
Oh, I love it. And even also in the product designing phase, in the future, that can really hit a spot right there where you have a better iteration of what you're doing right now, not necessarily with the supplement, but, you know, a day-to-day, a cleaning product, like you said, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
It could be better designed. It could be better packaging, cheaper packaging. That could come from AI for sure. Do you utilize or see the importance of data analysis and the space that you're in e-commerce?
Yeah, sure, for sure. I mean, I think it's important to keep an eye on trends. You know, it's important to understand, especially if you're heavy on a transaction, kind of a more traditional, if you will, e-commerce. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, you have to look at that. You got to look at things like how much does it cost for any business? What does it cost to acquire a customer, right? What's the lifetime value of that customer? What's the lifetime value if they purchase two products versus one versus five, you know? I think it's really important to stay on top of that stuff. But again, I think going back, if the quality of what you're putting out there, quality of the product itself is good, you know what I mean? I think that overcomes a lot of challenges, you know?
Yeah.
But for sure, yeah, data is going to be
important. It is important. Just jumping space into the operational side of things. Like you said, these drop shipping platforms would allow you to remove yourself technically from the day-to-day rut of actually having a product in a warehouse and labeling it and packaging it and sending it out there. Do you think that's an effective way of running an e-commerce business today? Or is it just like a cheaper way of doing it? One of the subjects that I really initiated me to do this podcast is because I do speak to small businesses on a day-to-day basis, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get hit by ads that tell you that before the end of this month, I can guarantee you that you can make $100,000 or $200,000, $500,000, right?
Yeah.
But it actually resonates with people because just like you said, they do want to make a little extra mm-hmm. side income, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is businesses is very difficult to operate and run.
100%.
I guess I'm kind of getting away from my original question, but
I'm following you.
Where do you see that, you know, operational logistics side coming into play? Or maybe, you know, tell me the difference between running your business, e-commerce business by yourself mm-hmm. and using these bigger platforms that are already established and getting your product out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we use a couple platforms. We don't use Amazon, but we use a few different platforms, as I've mentioned, that are like that, where many of the logistics are out of the way. I think that it's kind of like a double-edged sword, uh-huh. Based on mindset. Here's what I mean by that. The barrier to entry is very, very low. That means that as you're launching, you don't necessarily have to have a lot of skin in the game. But guess what? You don't have a lot of skin in the game. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think you can start it on a hobby budget, a shoestring hobby side hustle budget. But if you treat it like a little side hustle hobby, it's going to stay that way. You know, I think you have to come in understanding that, yeah, I didn't pay for some huge website to be built. Maybe I didn't pay for a bunch of advertising. Maybe you did pay for a bunch of advertising. I think the guy who takes out a credit card and for $10,000 and then goes right into, you know, spends all of that on advertising in your first 6 months, you know what I mean? That guy or gal is pretty invested because they know they got to pay that sucker back. You know, if you had some platforms that just, you know, there's free ones out there, maybe it's just a couple $100 or something to host a domain or something. It can be a double-edged sword because there's not very much skin in the game. So I think you have to bring, if you wanted to pay you, you know, like a professional, you got to treat it like a professional. If you wanted to, you know, you can't be a millionaire on a minute, like what they talk about on a minimum wage right. work ethic.
Right.
I think it's just gonna, it's just whatever the results are of whatever platform you use is going to reflect your mentality.
I see.
So, yeah.
So in the same e-commerce space, let's say if I was to design a product, mm-hmm. anything that it is very unique to me, do you think selling it on those platforms might be a better just to get started until you built, or doing the whole, I mean, you're going to have to do the logistics anyways if mm-hmm. it's really a unique product mm-hmm. for yourself. And I don't know if I answered my question there, but for a person that has a product that they want to sell mm-hmm. that is very unique and new to them, what would be the first couple of steps that they need to do to approach it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure, if you have something that you made, a product that's unique but you think has value, for sure. I mean, I think you, in my opinion, you're getting that in the hands of people who are already centers of influence, like we said,
yeah.
Whether you're selling it to them or not, getting some of those testimonials, getting some of those stories where it affected this person, and you can then arm yourself to really go to the masses with that. I mean, I think if it's going to be a physical product, I would look at having some type of support, you know, yeah. whether that's Amazon, whether that's eBay. And you maybe try some things. I think eBay is kind of the easiest and the simplest, you know, because, and again, I'm not sponsored by eBay or anything, I don't use them, but I think it's really just the transaction, and you can, if it's valuable to you and you know, you can see, okay, this person liked this person, there's probably hundreds, thousands, or millions of other people who would value it, you know? And so I think making it available to those people is the start. I mean, I'm not trying to sound vague or avoid the question, but I really think any way you go about it, you know, I think that the phase after that is going to be getting the word out there, right?
Uh-huh.
Scalability, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, I understand completely. Do you think customer experience comes into play when it comes to e-commerce? If you're completely removed from the actual product that you're selling and to the end consumer, but I guess in your space it's different because now you're selling it to your contact.
Right? Mm-hmm.
How is customer experience calculated in all this?
Yeah, I think it is a massive separator. We were just talking about lifetime value of a client. You know, if I have a client from my entire life, you know, that's a different take on that word, right? Mm-hmm. You know, most of the time they mean, okay, usually people buy 4 to 10 times from me or something like that. Just throw an example. So, okay, average, if that's how much they're, that's what the quantity that they're purchasing, what is that value equal out to? But if you create experiences for your customers that are unique, you know, then you truly do have a lifetime customer, right? If you continue to provide even some basic maintenance in that relationship. So I think it's really important. I think it's a major separator. People who have more traditionally e-commerce businesses, it's like you have to hire a customer service, you know what I mean? And then there's levels in that game too. Customer service that's overseas, it might be cheap for you and you're profitable, but do they speak English really well? Can they actually handle this? Do they sound like they care? So I think there's levels to that game as well, but the customer, your customer service and customer experience, I think is going to be a big separator for sure. So, yeah.
Love it. So you said that you have a mentor in this space, and I think that's very important in any space to have some sort of a mentor that I've done in the past that allow you to walk through the right steps. Do you see the benefit of working together in the e-commerce space being valuable instead of competing from a mile apart?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, and I can actually talk about a couple of different things based off that question that I think would be good for people to hear. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think scaling with working with business partners for me, I mean, I just think that's simpler. I just think it's your business is then it becomes about people versus about transactions, you know? And that's always, in my opinion, that's for me, that fits my mindset and my heart and my values. That fits me better, you know? There's other ways where if that's not you, then great, go do other stuff, you know? But you mentioned my mentor, and so I can talk a little bit about this. I mean, that's one thing I was gonna say is how I got into it anyway was because of our mentors. I wasn't looking for e-commerce, you know? I mean, I knew what it was, but, I think I've been married coming on 5 years now. When we were right before we're getting married, we're like, how do we create more freedom of time and money? Just like a lot of people, like, you know, we don't want to work for somebody else forever. We'd like to have some more choice and some more control, like I said, of time and money in our lives here. How do we really pull that off? And so we just looked for a person who had that. We looked for people really, and who had what we talked about, you know, and okay, they have a good marriage, their health is good, their stress is relatively low, right? They have options, but they also have impact, they have influence, and they have significant finances as part of that. Who has all that stuff and is willing to coach us, willing to mentor us, willing to help us along, and willing to just be a primary voice in our life that we can trust? I think a lot of people are looking for that. We looked for that first. We found some people, come to find out they were essentially knocking on the door of financial independence. They were just so a few steps ahead of us for sure, but not so far ahead that they were unrelatable. Mm. Now they're, you know, the folks that we work with are certainly, travel frequently. I mean, it's like they no one controls their time. So we sought out a person first and they said, hey, if we're willing to mentor you and coach you, here's how we did it. And I said, okay, cool. Hey, as long as we can check off legal, moral, and ethical, all right. Good. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how we ended up in the space in the first place. But one of the things you mentioned was getting into it. Now, I'll talk about this here.
Yeah.
You mentioned getting into e-commerce in the first place. And I think a lot of people are probably asking, you know, whether it's e-commerce or otherwise, how do I get started in something? I mean, I really think there's three things you start with, you know. The first is how do you ask yourself, how do you want to live? Define what kind of lifestyle you want to have and really put some thought into that. Like I just mentioned, your, you know, finances, sure. But also stress, you know, time. Am I going to be forever spending time away from my family and kids so this income can continue to come in, you know? I think you put some impact, the impact that you're making on other people, you know, control of your time, like I said, control of your money. I think a lot of those things come into play. Have some definition when it comes to that. I think that'll kind of narrow down. Mm-hmm. The second thing is going to be find a mentor who has those things, regardless of industry first. Find somebody who has those things and is also willing to coach you, because you can save many, many years of heartache and challenges by finding out somebody who's done well and also messed up a bunch of times, so you don't have to do that. Third thing I think is then going to be, especially if you found e-commerce to be something that you want to pursue after those first two, is then I would only then worry about platform and products. You know, that's really not to say it's the least important thing, but it's certainly not the most important thing. You know, I think there's a lot of different platforms, a lot of different products, but as long as they line up with how you want to live, you know, and you've run those by a mentor or a coach, I think you'll find the right one. So
yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Values are important, right? Mm-hmm. Something that you can connect with, or even have as a foundation to be able to say this is something that I look up to on a person. Therefore, if it leads to that business model, which kind of led to e-commerce in your space, mm-hmm. All right, I love it. Scalability. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yep.
Tell me the quickest way to get to $100,000 in a month.
In a month?
And I'm just kidding when I said that. Okay. That's one of the, like I said, the reasons why people are drawn into these kind of contents, because, you know, they see that maybe there is a way in the e-commerce space mm-hmm. to get to 100K in a month or two, right? But what does that mean, 100K? Is it sales? Is it profits?
Yeah,
it's not really dissected, right? So it's not really broken down. And how much are you really pumping out there as far as the, what do you call it? The marketing is concerned, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's something we need to touch on. Marketing. Mm-hmm. What is the effective marketing strategy that you have found?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, marketing is an area when you look at traditional marketing ads and things like that, we've really not messed with a lot of that because we're going network to network, if you will. But I do know for a fact, yeah, that's going to be a space. I mean, exposure. You're talking about getting the word out there, you know. And there's myriad ways to advertise, myriad ways to market, especially as we talked about with AI. So where mm-hmm. you can production costs, I feel like, are probably lower than ever because of technology, which is great. But yeah, I mean, I think also you can get really creative with that, especially now when we talk about influencer marketing. You know, if you know some centers of influence, you know, you can kind of use that and help each other out in that way. I think that's a great way to start if you're really going bootstrap with it, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think I don't want to, you know, speak too much on advertising because that's just not really something we've done. So I feel like I'd really be speaking out of turn there.
I understand.
But I was going to say, as far as, and maybe this will lead back to scalability. So I'll just say this bit and then if we need to to edit it or re-ask the question. When it comes to marketing yourself, especially for us as we are vetting partners, we're looking for partners. That's a whole conversation, I think, in and of itself. But having a brand out there, people are going to look you up on social media. You say, hey, you know, this is the business that I'm in. You know, somebody really helped me with this. That, you know, it's accomplished X, Y, and Z results in our life, and it's really been something great. Oh, I'd love to do that. Well, you know, here, let's slow down and have a conversation. Let's see if this will work for your values, this sort of thing. Second, you leave that conversation, they're looking you up on social. You know, so I think, in a way, that's kind of advertising. That's marketing, is making sure that your brand and whatever you're putting out there aligns with what you're talking about. So, yeah.
That's actually a very good point. People do look you up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
LinkedIn,
yeah.
Social media, they will definitely look you up to try to see who is this really person? Who is this person really? Mm-hmm. What are they projecting besides what they're saying? That's a very interesting piece. Anything else that you would like to put out there as it relates to this e-commerce space?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned scaling. You know, I think there's a lot of different ways you can scale, for sure. In a traditional business sense, scaling with employees is, you know, it's all about duplication, right? You're duplicating your efforts with another person who can hopefully do that task or those tasks 80% as good as you can or better, right? That's what I've always heard. If they can do it 80% or better, then let it rock and roll, you know? But I think one of our mentors showed us how to scale with other business owners in a professional way. There is a very unprofessional way to do this, and you would consider that more traditional salesy network marketing, where somebody's hitting you up, hey, sign up in this thing and you can make $100,000 a month too, like you were just talking about. Yeah. Very pushy, very salesy, very transactional, and that's because the value ends once the transaction is done, right? But what our mentor showed us when it came to scaling was, if you can build a business together and ongoing success creates ongoing profit for each other, you know, then now they're saying, okay, we need to find business partners, or if we're going to scale, but we need to find the right business partners. We need to, okay, somebody's going to see us and want to do what we do. Hey, what's your value system? How are you when it comes to patients? This is my mentors to me when I first approached them. They were going to scale with me, but they had to vet me. How are you when it comes to patients? You know, do you understand? You know, how are you when it comes to constructive criticism? You know, do you tend to be accountable? I noticed you were 5 minutes late. Is that something that I can expect from you moving forward, or do you think that you can, you know, overcome something like that? And in that way, they're vetting and they're very particular about who they partner with, because they know the value is after someone, you know, starts a business or, you know, after that transaction, so to speak, because after then it's, you know, years of effort, time, energy, money poured into that new business partner, hoping that they are successful and they're going to make darn sure that that's the right person. Yeah. So when it comes to scaling, I think, yeah, picking, you know, growing, if you're going to grow with business partners, really make sure that that's a right, a quality business partner that you align with, that you like, you enjoy spending time around maybe, and you can get along with. That's kind of underrated, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And that way you can both have long-term success, and it's also much more professional. And that way you don't become that guy on your social who's always hitting in people's DMs, hitting them up. You're not that guy at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Brendan's going to come. I know he's going to talk to me about try to sign up his business. No. Don't do that, you know, unless you want to do that. But yeah, I feel like your relationships are going to dissolve pretty quickly after that. So yeah, that's what I'd say as far as scaling.
Yeah. Trust, build trust and maintain that trust and scale that way mm-hmm. with partners. Do you think partners, the subject kind of expands from your mentor in that space? Or when I'm, 'cause when you say partners, people that I'm thinking about are people that are going to support